Welcome to the CMR Podcast, a podcast by the Center for Migration Law.
Migration is a phenomenon of all times and always a topical issue. In this podcast, we discuss migration in the broad sense. Migration law determines who can access the territory of a country, which rights migrants have, integration as well as equal treatment, citizenship. Migration law and policy making takes place at the international, European, regional, national, and sometimes even local level. Our research aims to contribute to science-based policy making from this multi-level, holistic perspective. Researchers of the Dutch Center for Migration Law at the Radboud University in Nijmegen have been investigating migration law from an interdisciplinary angle for a good 3 decades. In this podcast, we provide behind-the-scenes insights of our research projects and the involvement of researchers in policymaking. One of our current projects is the Horizon Europe-funded project Global Strategy for Skills, Migration and Development, in short, GS4S. In this project, 14 partners from 10 countries seek to better understand global skills shortages in the digital, care, and construction sectors, and foster skills development through innovative analysis. The project proposes multi-level evidence-based policies on labor migration governance and alternative ways to address these shortages in actually 6 regions: the EU, the EEA, Western Balkan, Middle East, Northern Africa, West Africa, and South-Southeast Asia. In a subseries of 6 podcasts, we will present some of the results of the project. More information on the project is in the show notes. Welcome to the Center for Migration Law podcast and our first episode of 2026. My name is Tesseltje de Lange. I am a professor of European Migration Law and director of the Center for Migration Law. I am also the principal investigator of the Horizon Europe project, Global Strategy for Skills, Migration and Development. It is my pleasure to welcome 2 guests, GS4S project members Ferruccio Pastora and Sara Corby. Ferruccio is a director of FIERI, an independent and non-profit association that has conducted research on migratory phenomena for more than 20 years. And Sara is also at FIERI. Her background is in the field of international relations and diplomacy, international protection, and international humanitarian law.
Thank you for the invitation.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to have you both. Great. So in GS4S, FIERI leads research on skills waste of migrants in Europe. So congratulations first on your recent comparative report on this topic, to which we will return. But before we dive into the results, Ferruccio, let me put it to you. Could you briefly introduce us to the issue at stake when we talk about migrant skills waste and what that potentially means in the European policy context?
Thank you, Tesseltje. Let me start by sketching a little bit of a background. And on the background, we have migrant workers, including both migrants from third countries and EU mobile workers, who represent a sizable and fast-growing share of the workforce in the EU. It was only 2% in 2010, and it is now somewhere around 10%. But the pace of this change is getting quicker. In the last 3 years, foreign workers have accounted for half of the total growth of the labor force in the bloc, in the union. And these workers altogether, who are around 20 million, including both country nationals and EU nationals, are already critical in keeping European economies on a path of growth, however, you know, modest this growth currently is. And if we think in terms of skill shortages, which is the core issue in the GS4S project, migrant workers have a very important role in filling such shortages. But the point, I think the main point of our discussion today, is that this role already quite significant, could be much bigger. Let me try and explain how this can be. On average, immigrants have worse labor market outcomes than natives, which means, for instance, that in most EU countries, not all of them, but most of them, they have lower activity rates than natives. And also they are much more likely to be employed in low-skilled jobs, independently, and this is crucial, independently of their actual skills and qualifications. In terms of human capital, this means that the immigrant population, meaning immigrants who are already legally settled in the EU, which is the target of this part of our research, represent already a vast and largely unexploited source of valuable skills, energies, and creativity. One could speak of an internal talent pool. There is a lot of discussion currently in EU policy circles about a talent pool, which is supposed to be, will be, an external one, but we should never forget that we have an internal talent pool, which is, for many respects, more easily available, at least in the medium and short term. So this is basically what we mean by skill waste. And in this regard, let me quickly recall here the work done by our colleagues Tommaso Frattini and others, also in the framework of GS4S, which was the topic of, I think, the second episode of this podcast series, but I think it's important to recall it here. Our colleagues mapped the skill waste in the EU in terms of over-education, defined as the condition of those who have completed more education than their current job actually requires. So these over-educated people were 21%, more or less one in five among natives, and 34% among immigrants, one in three, more than one in three, and even higher if one considers only third country nationals. What is striking is that this gap persists also if you consider only immigrants who completed their education in the EU. So it's not a matter of quality of education. So what does this skill waste, what does this over-education, which is a fundamental indicator of skill waste, depend on? We thought that quantitative analysis was very important, but not enough to answer this question. This is why we decided to go for some qualitative analysis, basically consisting of interviews with stakeholders, focus groups with different categories of migrant workers in four EU countries, which are Estonia, Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, plus Switzerland. So a very wide range of countries in terms of type of migrant presence and in terms of features of active labor market policies. But here, I think I leave the floor to my colleague who will tell you more about this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ferruccio, for this expose that is very clear and worrying in a way. So, Sarah, indeed, over to you to talk about the findings from the report, which has the title How to Make the Most of Migrant Skills, the Hurdles and Potential of Up and Reskilling of Migrant and Refugee Workers. How do migrants who participated in the research actually perceive the importance of skills? Because I understand you spoke with migrants across the EU and in Switzerland. And maybe you can highlight some of the hurdles that they face in accessing and completing up and reskilling.
Thank you, Tessalti. That's a really important question. So what we found across the five countries is that migrants see skills as absolutely crucial, but also deeply ambivalent. They are empowering, yet often also frustrating. And there is actually a very strong awareness that qualifications and training are essential for getting stable jobs and building a secure future. Many participants see upskilling and reskilling as the main pathway to financial independence. For some, actually, it's very practical. For example, people doing physically demanding jobs told us they want to retrain because they know they won't be able to do that kind of work forever. But skills, of course, are not just about money. For many, they are also about dignity, about self-worth, about being recognized for what you can actually do. And at the same time, aspirations are also very high. Many arrive determined to work and to support their families. But still, frustration emerges when structural barriers like bureaucracy, language requirements, non-recognition of qualifications block those ambitions. Highly qualified migrants in particular describe the emotional impact of having to repeat degrees they already completed or being pushed into jobs that are far below their skill level. And that creates a very deep sense of wasted potential. And yet, what really stands out, I think, is resilience, because motivation to learn remains very strong. And when training programs are accessible and well supported, for example, through mentoring, through internships, they can really change people's trajectories. Participants described those experiences as turning points that helped them regain control over their professional lives. And this actually connects directly to the second part of your questions, because even though skills are clearly valued, accessing and completing training is often extremely difficult. In our research, we identified a whole bundle of obstacles. Some obstacles are personal, linked to individual circumstances. Others are structural, coming from laws, from institutions, and very often they reinforce each other. Probably the major barrier is economic vulnerability. So many migrants simply cannot afford to stop working to attend a course. Even if training is free, there's still the cost of time. And some people told us very openly, I can't study if my family depends on the money I send home. So, of course, survival comes first in this case, and that leads to dropouts or to never enrolling at all. Then language. Language is another major challenge. Limited proficiency affects access to training and to qualified jobs. And, of course, also in some countries, there are long waiting lists for language courses or there are very frequent policy changes. Then we have family responsibilities that also matter a lot, especially for women, because childcare, lack of support networks, sometimes also traditional gender norms, make it very hard to participate in training. And then there is the issue of networks. That's very important. Many participants told us that finding a course or a job often depends on knowing someone. So networks provide information, provide references, but provide also emotional support. Without them, it's much easier to get stuck in low-paid work. On top of that, structural barriers are constant. For example, bureaucratic delays in residence permits or strict income requirements to stay in the country, complicated, long procedures to recognize foreign diplomas. So when your legal status depends on having a stable income, you're, of course, much more likely to accept any job quickly instead of investing in long-term training. And then housing insecurity plays a similar role. If reception support is time-limited and you need to leave in a few months, you prioritize immediate income over studying. Discrimination also came up very, very frequently in our interviews, in our focus groups. Some migrants are automatically channeled into those considered migrant jobs, regardless of their qualifications. So all these elements can combine into what we describe as a sort of precarity trap. We have legal insecurity, unstable housing, low income, lack of networks. They reinforce each other and make this long-term planning almost impossible. So in the end, it's not just about offering more training, but it's about creating stable, legal, socioeconomic conditions that actually allow people to invest in their skills and to use them.
Thanks, Sarah. It's very interesting. And I actually, as we are in the Netherlands, very much recognize the Dutch context as well in your findings, where indeed, the participation of youth in education, for instance, people with a refugee status, not participating in education at all in their 20s, while we all know that their chances on the labor market are limited without having proper education, but there's just too much on their plate. Like you described, the family responsibilities, but indeed also discrimination, housing, etc. which is an evident waste of the talent pool that we have already inside the EU, as Ferrugio rightly notes. So this is very interesting. Sarah, I know that you spoke with a lot of people. Do you maybe have an example that you want to highlight that captures this dilemma specifically?
Yes, actually, there is one example that I find particularly telling because I think it captures the dilemma that many refugees face. So one participant in Italy told us, and I'm going to quote, "My reception project will end in about 6 months. It's really stressful. I'm looking for a house now, and it's hard because I don't have a job. To rent an apartment, you need a guarantee. Landlords often want a permanent contract. In my case, I'm just about to start a new training course, but I'm confused. Should I go for training or should I just look for a job? If I must leave the reception project, then I need to earn money as soon as possible. So should I spend my time studying or should I roll up my sleeves and take the first job I can find? I tell myself, whatever comes first, I'll take it." I think this quote perfectly describes the precarity trap. On paper, training opportunities exist, but in reality, access to housing depends on having a stable job. And having a stable job often requires time, language skills, sometimes even further training. And at the same time, also reception support is temporary. So actually, people are forced to make survival decisions instead of long-term investment decisions. I think that this example shows that the problem is not the lack of motivation. The person clearly wants to study. The issue is structural insecurity. And I think this really captures the broader message of our research. Skills can be transformative, but only if the surrounding conditions allow people to actually use them.
Thank you, Sarah. From reading your report, I take the example of the recommendation, and this brings me to the topic actually of potential broader policy implications of the research. But I recall one example where you say that transportation should be provided, right? Like bus tickets, etc. But in the Dutch context, if I look at where refugees are housed, there is no bus. So it actually is also about getting a driver's license, for instance, and then you need language to be able to pass a test, etc. So it's sort of a circle from which it's very hard to break free. And like I said, going into the policy implications of this research, Ferrugio, can I come back to you with some suggestions in that respect?
Yes, I think that the key point from a political point of view is that the potential of existing migrant workforce for tackling labor shortages is there and it is large, but it comes with a cost. To turn this potential into a real factor of growth, we need constant and tailored efforts. We need substantial investments as well, and this is not happening, not sufficiently. The comparative outlook is very uneven across our five target countries. We have some member states that are doing more and better, while others are lagging behind. And additionally, in most countries, lifelong training is a decentralized competence with a strong role of subnational entities and also of social and economic partners. So it is almost impossible to make a general European assessment. But all in all, currently, the investment of not only financial resources, but also intellectual research resources, political administrative resources is insufficient. And unfortunately, this is demonstrated by some trends, by some figures. In the last years, in several member states, such as my country, such as Italy, the activity rate of foreigners is, instead of growing up, has been decreasing, also in comparison to natives, which is, of course, worrying. It goes in the opposite direction to what we are suggesting. And this leads us, I think, to an even more fundamental issue that goes actually beyond the scope and the ambitions of the GS4S project, but which I think is impossible not to mention. And the issue is the fundamental massive structural contradiction between the evident potential of migrant labor for Europe's future and our collective cultural and political reluctance to acknowledge such reality. I think we are all aware in Europe of this tension, of this contradiction, but some are, you know, betting and investing of the possibility of solving this contradiction through technology. To put it in brutal and maybe overly simplistic terms, to replace migrants with robots or with technology in the broader sense. Well, I think that in these terms, this, you know, kind of horizon, which is very much present in the debate today and growingly, is a delusion. I mean, it may turn into an ideological cover for increasingly fragile and fragmented labor markets. Post-migration societies, which many are depicting, are, we think, based on this evidence, a delusion. And we think that, you know, humanoids and humans, including mobile humans, artificial and natural intelligence, including migrants' intelligence, will all be needed for Europe's future. And I think we have to invest in both in order to preserve both our standards of living and our fundamental values. So I think this is the broader political implication of this research.
Thank you. I think that's a very important message that goes way beyond actually this project. And as we are nearing the end of our conversation, this actually takes me to a final question to you, Farrugio, because as your part of the research was concluded, the question is, what are the next steps that Fieri is taking with this field of research?
Yes, I think that for both Fieri, but also Radboud University, the work done together in the framework of the GS4S project is part of a broader collaborative effort. And by collaborative, I mean transnational, cross-disciplinary, and comparative. And this work, this endeavor, focuses on the role of migrant labor in European economies in a very wide sense, and even beyond Europe, because you reminded in the beginning that GS4S has also very important partners and parts of the research conducted in countries as far as Bangladesh, Nigeria, and Egypt. In particular, to illustrate this broader effort, I would like to mention a parallel project which our listeners may be interested in. It is called Dignity Firm, and it is led by Radboud, by you, Tesseltje, and it deals specifically with irregular work, which, by the way, is a way, although a very suboptimal way often, to cope with labor shortages. So we are also trying to understand how irregular work and labor shortages are interplaying, are interacting as you know, economic and social phenomena. And also I'm happy to announce that towards the end of this year, again, Radboud and Fieri and other partners will be together again in a New Horizon project led by the Austrian University of Krems with Albert Kraler as a principal investigator. And this also will focus on different forms of unregistered and underregistered gray and black forms of work. This new project is called REFAIR, and hopefully it will be another step towards, you know, identifying through evidence, through research, better, less exploitative and more productive ways of incorporating migrants in both our economies and in our societies.
Thank you very much, Farrugio and Sarah. Farrugio also for flagging these other projects, which indeed we can add some references to in the show notes, as there will be more information on your specific work in the show notes. Our next episode will be exploring insights from, again, the GS4S project, based on a business survey in four European countries. So stay tuned. Thank you very much again, Ferrugio and Sarah. Hope to see you soon and have a nice day.
Thank you. Have a nice day too.
Thank you. It was our pleasure.